Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Halfway through the morning, the nursery school teacher called me. "Could you please come get your son?" she asked. "He seems to be very distressed." When I arrived at school, my three-year-old was standing red-eyed and shaking in the hallway. As I scooped him into my arms, he began to sob. The teacher looked puzzled. "We were all just watching the movie An American Tale about a mouse family coming to the New World. But as soon as the little mouse got separated from his family, your son began to cry. We just couldn't let him disturb the others." How can we protect our children from such incidents? For our children's sakes, how can we become more knowledgeable movie watchers? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. We are fortunate to have as our guest today, Nell Minow, a parent herself and an expert on movie issues for children. Her book, The Movie Mom's Guide to Family Movies, offers the advice and suggestions parents crave. Nell, we're so glad to have you with us.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
Why does it matter what movies children watch? After all, as some parents say, well, it's only a movie.
Well, that's like saying, why does it matter what they eat? It's only food. I think that parents who look very carefully at the ingredients on food labels also should look very carefully at what their children watch. You know, movies are really the equivalent in today's world of the sagas that used to be told around the campfires, of the myths that were so important in ancient Rome and ancient Greece. They're really the way that we explain the world to ourselves, and more important, the way that we explain the world to our children. They're the first glimpses that children get of the adult world. What is it like when mom and dad go to the office? Is it like the office that I've seen in this movie? What is it like when people fall in love? They're the way that we explain the world to ourselves, and children take that very seriously.
That makes it sound like it's a huge responsibility for the parents.
Well, it's a huge opportunity, too, because you get a chance to talk to children about what they see. Very often, it's easier for kids to talk about what happens to the people on the screen than it is for them to talk about what's going on with themselves, especially toddlers and teenagers who are notorious for not being really communicative. But if a toddler can say that Big Bird looks scared or Big Bird looks happy, it's a way of helping him talk about himself. And if a teenager can say, I would never do something like that, that's also his way to communicate with you.
Is there really that much difference between movies available today and the movies we watched when we were growing up?
There's all the difference in the world. At least when I was growing up, I turned 18 just at the time the rating system came in. So there really was a seamless transition for me. But when we were growing up, you could be pretty confident that, well, just take television, for example. It's hard to believe now that there was a controversy over whether I Dream of Jeannie could show her belly button, or that there was a controversy over whether Clark Gable would be allowed to use the word damn in Gone with the Wind. But there was. And now it's almost impossible to watch a television program at 7 or 8 o'clock at night that doesn't make some reference to casual sex or to some level of violence that is very hard for children to put in context.
Do you want to comment for a minute or two about the rating system?
Oh, I would love to. The rating system is very formulaic, and therefore it is just about useless. I mean, you're pretty sure what you're getting with a G movie, and you're pretty sure what you're getting with an NC-17. But for the ratings in between, it's very difficult. I can give you one example. I took my son to see a movie called The Man Who Knew Too Little with Bill Murray, and it was rated PG. Now, this is a movie that featured a humorous sadomasochistic sex scene in it. And as we came out of the movie, my son said to me, "I don't understand. Why was he asking her to spank him?" Now, I can tell you, because I know how the rating system works, that the reason that this did not elicit a PG-13 or a NC-17 rating was that it was played for humor. The people were clothed, and they were, I would say, middle-aged to elderly, and so therefore it was considered to be funny and not sexy. Nevertheless, it raised a certain number of questions, and I would have liked to have known beforehand that that kind of material was going to be included. I think the most treacherous area is in the PG-13 area, where you have just a very, very wide range of, you know, one or two uses of an expletive to something that's very deeply disturbing. I have to give you one other story. There's a terrific family movie called Fly Away Home, a beautiful, exquisite, photographed movie about a girl who forms a very close relationship with some geese and is able to save them. And the distributor on that film insisted that they insert one four-letter word. Why? Because they said that children will not go to G-rated movies other than Disney cartoons, and that if it didn't get a PG rating, no one would go to see it. And so over the objections of the producers and the screenwriter, they had to put in one little tiny four-letter word said off-screen by a bad guy. But nevertheless, it got them that PG rating, and therefore they got the audience they wanted.
That's amazing. But I can understand that. My 13-year-old, for years, felt that it was a mark of maturity to try to go to a PG-13, or now we have issues with R-rated
movies.
Absolutely.
I have to tell you my favorite story about that. When my son was about 5, he said to me, "How old is your grandmother?" And I said, "Well, honey, she's about 90 years old. Why?" And he said, "Boy, I bet she can go to any movie she wants."
Isn't that cute?
And so it is very important that we don't say to kids, "It's too old for you," or "You can do it when you get to this age." I often used to say to my kids, "It's too stupid for you," which is what I meant. I think I gained a lot of credibility by finding a couple of R-rated movies that I thought were okay for my young teenagers and letting them know that I was making the decision based on what I knew about them and what I knew about the movie and not on some kind of an arbitrary formula.
Had you seen the movies before they did? Or that's what I was going to ask you. How do you know if a movie is going to be appropriate for your child, even if it's G-rated?
Well, I can't recommend this to everyone, but yes, I do see the movie before I let them see it, and I read a lot about it. Now, I have a website, www.moviemom.com, that people can go to, and then there are other guides. Screenit.com is another good one, where they can get a little information, where they can talk to other parents who have seen it, and they can find out what they can. It's also equally important, of course, to know your child. Now, I've got a child who has a much higher tolerance for scary material than I do. So I watched his reaction as I showed him increasingly scarier movies. And sometimes I had to watch them from the next room because I didn't want to watch the movie myself. But he handled it very well. And so I have a sense of what he can take.
Would you repeat your website again?
www.moviemom.com.
Thanks. Why are Disney movies and some cartoons that are designed for kids often so scary?
Yeah, I hear a lot of complaints from parents that take their 3- and 4-year-olds to Disney cartoons and are upset when the children get upset. But the fact is that those movies are scary for the same reason that stories that children listen to have always been scary. They're the same stories, Sleeping Beauty, Cinderella. Those are very scary movies, and they're scary stories. And that's because they help children work through a lot of very important issues. That does not mean, however, that a 4-year-old is ready to sit in a theater, which is a very overwhelming experience, and see those movies. And I don't recommend taking children under 5 to the theater to see a movie.
Mm-hmm. And today they can watch them at home, which is nice.
Well, I generally feel in many cases that the intensity of a movie pretty much goes down one rating by watching it at home. And so that a movie like Jurassic Park, which is a very intense, overwhelming experience in a theater, is a lot less intense when you see it at home. That doesn't work in all cases, but when what your concern is with the movie has to do with tension and surprises and scariness as opposed to disgusting violence, I think that is a good rule of thumb.
I went to see Jurassic Park with my son, who had already seen it, and he said the best part of the movie was watching me. I was terrified.
Yeah, I was
scared. That's the part
too.
He liked.
I went to see Independence Day with my son, who had already seen it, and bless his heart, he said, "Now, Mom, the really scary part is coming up next."
Now, what do you do in terms of determining whether a child's old enough for a particular movie?
That's another one that's very tough, and I'll tell you my favorite story about that. My niece, Alexandra, is a very tough little girl, very smart. And her mother called me one day and when Alex was about 4 and said, "I'm going to take Alex to see Bambi." Now, I said to her mother, "Listen, I was 38 when I saw Bambi for the first time, and it scared me." And her mother said, "I've done everything that you always advise. I know exactly what the scary parts are. I know that Bambi's mother gets killed. I know there's a forest fire. I'm going to sit by the exit. I'm taking her favorite blankie. I think I'm completely prepared. We've discussed the movie, and I think it'll be an important experience for her, and she's going to like it." So I said, "Okay, fine, let me know how it goes." Well, she took Alex to the movie. Mother gets shot, no problem. Forest fire, no problem. My sister-in-law's breathing a sigh of relief until it comes to the end of the movie, where Alex gets hysterical and starts to scream and cry, Where's Bambi? What happened to Bambi? Where's Bambi? Bambi grew up. And her mother said, what do you mean, where's Bambi? There's Bambi. It's impossible for an adult to know how shocking that is for a child. That's Bambi right there. No, Bambi's got the little spots on his back. And of course, Bambi also has the very young voice. A four-year-old barely knows that a child becomes an adult. They certainly don't know that little Bambi becomes looking like Bambi's dad. And she was absolutely beside herself. So that shows you really cannot know what's going to scare a child. And you have to talk to the child ahead of time, give them some idea what the story is about, gauge their reaction, and then you also have to be prepared. Life is scary, movies are scary, and it's something that you cannot control. Children will become scared at some point.
Well, I thought I was doing a really nice thing because I read the story of Bambi and we talked about Bambi and I took four separate sons, you know, four separate periods of time, way stretched out from each other. They were all fine. Every time the mother died, I cried.
That's what happened to me.
I know. Well, as I said, I was 38 when I first saw it because my mother didn't let me see it. It was the only one she didn't let me see as a child. And finally, I was at home one night. It came on television. The kids were in bed. And I thought, well, you know what? I think I'm going to watch it. And of course I got upset. It's very upsetting. And so is Love Story. So are many movies. So is Gone with the Wind. That's something that's part of the appeal is that they do affect our emotions. But that can be overwhelming for a child.
When a child does get frightened by a movie, what should parents do?
Well, there are number of things you can do. If you're at home and it's a video, it's very important to teach the child how to turn it off and to give them some sense of control. I remember my son was frightened by a book one time and he asked me if I would put it on the top shelf where he couldn't reach it anymore. And I said, absolutely. And as far as I know, it's still up there about 10 years later. So you want to give them some sense of control. Another thing you can do is you can ask them to work through it in some way. You can say to them, well, if you were the judge, would you put Cruella de Vil in jail? Do you want to draw a picture of Cruella de Vil in jail? Do you want to write a story or sing a song or do a dance about the movie? That kind of thing can be very helpful. There are also some terrific books that you can read to children. And my favorite one is called The Annie Stories, written by a therapist for her own child. And when my son was having nightmares, I read him the story about nightmares in that book. And she suggests how you can adapt it for each child in each circumstance. And it was tremendously helpful to him. And it really helped him work through it.
My niece had to leave the Prince of Egypt. Right. She was six and she was just terrified of the size and the motion, apparently, that went on. I haven't seen the movie, so I don't know. But her little brother, her older brother, who's a year older, stayed and he was fine.
Each child is going to have his own reactions. I remember when we went to see The Little Mermaid, my son was crying because it was so sad, and my daughter was saying, doesn't she have any other clothes? She's been wearing the same outfit the whole movie.
That's wonderful.
That is interesting. They're all different.
Yeah.
Well, when a child says to a parent, but everyone else has seen this movie, how do you deal with that one?
Well, we don't raise our children by lowest common denominator. And I think probably the greatest gift of the many gifts my parents gave me, the greatest gift was telling me when I was six that argument never works and I could just forget about it right then. Of course, that backfired on my parents when we got married and I told them I wanted to get married barefoot and they said, but everyone wears shoes when they get married. But that's another story. I think you give children a great sense of independence. If you say to them, if you get swayed by a but everyone else argument, then you're basically saying to them, when everybody else shoplifts and when everyone else uses drugs, when everyone else has sex, that's probably a reason for you to do it too. So you have to let them know that has nothing to do with you. It's interesting, but it's not controlling. And that you will make your decisions based on what's right for them. And in a way, it's very liberating for them.
What should parents do about movies that might be watched at someone else's house when a child is there?
You know, that is one of the questions I get asked most often. And it's the best parents who ask it because they are so careful. They do read the product labels and they do check and make sure that the movies are appropriate for their child. And then their child goes over to someone else's house and they don't clear it ahead of time. I just got an anguished email from a mother who is very protective of her 6-year-old who went over to someone's house for a sleepover and watched Titanic.
Oops. Oh, my goodness.
And I also heard recently from a mother whose 11-year-old went over to someone's house for an overnight and watched The Exorcist. And had nightmares for 3 weeks.
Oh, sure.
And so this is going to sound very harsh, but I really do recommend that you say when you set up the play date, my child isn't allowed to watch television or videos. I hope that's not going to be a problem for you.
Oh, no.
And then you,
so you just say no
just say
television
no,
or videos
nothing.
So that it's...
Yeah, really. I think about it for a minute. You're really not sending them over there so they can sit and watch television. Now, if the parent says back to you, oh, that's a shame, we were going to make popcorn and watch Babe, then you can say, oh, well, just this once, I'll make an exception. And I think it's also very important with babysitters. I did get an email this week from a mother who said that she had not allowed her daughter, who was about 8, to watch Grease. Well, a babysitter came over, and the daughter said, let's rent Grease, and they did. And so it is important. I feel if I'm paying the babysitter, I'm paying them to sit and not to watch a video. And so I make it very clear that they are there to play with the child and not to sit in front of the TV.
That's a big point. Because we don't want the children to forget that when you get together with other children or when a babysitter is there, that interaction is much more important.
Of course it is.
It's easy to fall into the video trap.
Of course it is. Now, my son is in high school, and the parents set up a party for the kids, and there was quite a lot of debate over whether there should be a video at the party. And some people came down on the side of interaction, and other people said, these are 14 and 15-year-olds. They can barely be in the same room together. Maybe they need something to help them focus and to give them something to talk about. And they decided to have a video, which the boys picked and none of the girls would watch, and it was not such a great thing. I have been confronted with this in the past where I have sent my children to parties, and it never dawned on me that people would show a video at a party, but they do. And my son went to a party, and he was about 12, and they showed the movie Scream.
Oh, my.
And he left.
Isn't that interesting?
One of the things I learned when my kids were quite young, there was a wonderful teacher at our elementary school, and she said, teach your children to use you as an excuse.
Absolutely.
I have to go home. I forgot. I have to do something with my parents, or I can't go to that party because we're doing something as a family. Or, you know, my mom said she was picking me up really early. I better go call her.
Absolutely. I think that's very important, and I'm glad to be an excuse. I found out that my son had walked out of the movie Scream because one of the mothers of one of the girls there called to thank me. She said, because of what your son did, my daughter had the courage to leave, too.
Oh, how wonderful.
It's empowering. I hadn't even known about it, yeah.
Isn't that interesting? Well, we've had some interesting things because we haven't had frightening things, but we've had things with objectionable material in it where there was real social pressure. My son is in seventh grade, and evidently the eighth graders are having newsletters or newspapers or something that they're doing, and they're soliciting material from the seventh graders. And one of the things that my son evidently volunteered to do was do a movie review. Well, they wanted him to review a specific movie. Well, the movie was Varsity Blues.
Uh-huh.
Well, Mom, it's only a story about football. Come on, you know. And then the other stuff that they always pull is, well, you know, it has violence if the movie has violence, but it doesn't have sex, so that should be okay.
Right. Yeah. In my book, I use an example that I overheard in a video store of a child saying, I know it's rated R, but it's only violence, not sex.
That's right.
And it's funny because what I often hear from parents is, I won't let them watch violence, but I don't care about the sex. So what I say to them is, look, it's unlikely that your child will actually have to deal with violence in his life, but I guarantee you that in some way he or she is going to have to deal with sex, and let's think about what kinds of messages that you're getting. Another thing that you hear from kids these days is, I've already read the Star Report. There's going to be nothing in there that I haven't already seen, but that doesn't work for me.
Well, it's not a dramatic reading of the Star Report, first of all.
A reenactment, God forbid. Nevertheless, in terms of dealing with male-female images, I mean, let's talk about Grease for a minute. Grease is probably the number one most popular video among girls 8 to 12. And certainly, I can see why. And I would say 80% of it is not objectionable to me, but there is a very cavalier treatment of a possible pregnancy in there. And also, I'm very disturbed that the message, the ultimate message in the last scene of the movie is dress like a complete bimbo to attract a boy. And I think that is a powerful message. In a way, that's more powerful than the Star Report because you don't see consequences.
What should parents do if the objectionable material in the film is really, in terms of the children, just over their heads?
Well, a lot of parents ask me that, too. I think everyone who is a parent knows that item number one in the job description of being a child is figuring out all of that stuff that's over their heads. That's what their job is. That's how they turn out to be grown-ups. And a young girl was visiting my daughter recently, and she told me a joke that she clearly didn't understand, that was an extremely raunchy joke. And she said, that was funny, wasn't it? And I said, where did you hear that joke? And she said, at Romy and Michelle's high school reunion. She said, I didn't understand it, but my mother laughed. And so I asked her to explain it to me.
And so did her mother explain it?
Yes, she did.
Oh, wow.
She said, it's about sex. That was the explanation.
Oh, that's the explanation.
Yeah.
That's cute. So if you tell it, you're quite sophisticated.
Yeah. But I do, my heart kind of sank for her about that. So I think that, A, they will figure it out. B, when they do figure out, they're going to feel a little dirty inside that you didn't protect them from this. So I know parents who will rent a movie and they'll say, well, we fast-forwarded through that part. Well, I guarantee you that is going to make them very curious about what was in that part. They will remember and they will go see it at a friend's house and they will say, let's do that one again. I want to see that. So I don't think you're doing them any favors by anticipating what is over their head. You could be wrong. And if you're right, it's only a matter of time.
Now, we'd like to know a little bit more about your new book. Would you tell us a little about it?
Sure. It's called The Movie Mom's Guide to Family Movies, and it includes about 550 movies that I think are really wonderful for families to watch, families with children from ages 2 to 18. It's grouped by issue so that if you want to show your children some movies to help you talk about sensitive and difficult issues like integrity, responsibility, tolerance, ambition, competition, money, family dynamics. I've got a chapter called Families, Functional, and Dis. On the functional side, we've got movies like Little Women. On the dysfunctional side, some more unusual kinds of families. And also lots of movies just for fun, the best westerns, the best musicals, the best comedies. It also has a lot of material about how to talk to your kids about what they see, what to do when they raise the kinds of questions that you've been asking me, best movies for kids who are sick in bed or stuck at home, even the best movies for parents about being a parent.
That's terrific. What would you say to a kid who basically doesn't want to see whatever it is that you choose, the sort of a developmental thing?
Right. Well, a lot of kids have a problem, in theory, with watching older movies. And my daughter once said to me, black and white movies are boring. And I said to her, oh, gee, I'm sorry. I thought you were old enough to watch this movie. Well, I'll tell you what, you go up in color and your brother and I will watch it. Well, maybe I'll stay for 5 minutes. I'm only going to watch the first 10 minutes. I said, okay, fine. Well, let me tell you, it was the Marx Brothers, and she loved it.
Yeah.
So I think that's what you do. You say, all right, fine. I'm sorry. I thought you would like this movie, but if you won't, that's too bad. I'll enjoy it, and we'll get another movie for you another time. Another big adjustment for kids is that kids who've grown up on Sesame Street and Nickelodeon are used to a lot of quick cuts and explosive effects, and the other movies, older movies, can seem a little slower and subtler to them. I think that's actually very good for them to get used to that kind of storytelling, make their minds work a little bit more. But it can be an adjustment. And in the most extreme cases, I recommend to parents a week of detox, no TV or movies for a week so that they can be prepared to watch something that's a little more challenging.
Well, Nell, we're delighted that you could be with us today. You've shown us how we can make watching movies with our kids an enriching and productive experience. Our gift for caller number 2 on our listeners' poll is everything you need for a child's party, all the party supplies except the food. Call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 to answer the following question. What movie has been the biggest hit with your family and why?
We'd like to send you the free party supplies. For other comments or questions, you can reach Parents Perspective through your local station or by email at parentspur@aol.com or call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573. Now you can also visit us on our website, http://i.am/parentsperspective. I'm going to repeat it. It's http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.